This is Nightmare in Wisconsin.
The trial of Taylor Shabusiness. Accusations of first-degree intentional homicide, strangulation, mutilation, dismemberment, and necrophilia.
We bring you raw, unfiltered courtroom audio from the trial of Taylor Shabusiness. Nightmare in Wisconsin.
I'll call UCF 363, State of Wisconsin versus Taylor Shabusiness. State appears by Deputy District Attorney Saunders and District Attorney Lizay. Also appearing is the defendant, Ms. Shabusiness. Mr. Frederick is here today, or this morning, continuation of the competency hearing. The court has now received a copy of the report from the Wisconsin Forensic Unit, Dr. Seipel. He's here on the Zoom. Did both parties receive a copy, Mr. Saunders?
Yes.
Mr. Frelick?
Yes, I did, and I reviewed it with my client.
Very good. So I think that's where we will pick up, because we had the first half of this hearing last week. That was Dr. Leighton testifying. I know that she's on the Zoom as well. So Mr. Frelick may or may not choose to call her in rebuttal.
Okay. Thank you.
Afterwards. But I think I'd turn the case over to you. Do you want to initially direct Dr. Seipel, Mr. Saunders?
I'll take care of questioning this morning, Your Honor.
Mr. Lizay, then are you going to call Dr. Seipel then?
Yes, I am, Your Honor.
Okay, doctor, if you could please raise your right hand, I'm going to place you under oath. Do you swear the testimony you are about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Very good. Mr. Lizay, the witness is yours.
Thank you. Dr. Seipel, can you state for the record how you are currently employed?
I am employed as a licensed psychologist with Behavioral Consultants Incorporated and the Wisconsin Forensic Unit, where I perform forensic mental health evaluations, including competency to proceed on a full-time basis.
And how long have you worked at the Wisconsin Forensic Unit?
So I began with the Forensic Unit as a postdoctoral forensic psychology fellow in September of 2020, and I've continued with the practice since obtaining my psychology license in February of 2022.
Can you estimate approximately how many court-ordered competency evaluations you have performed over the course of your career?
It is approximately 800 to date.
And have you been accepted in Wisconsin courts as an expert or as a witness on the issue of competency to proceed in criminal cases?
Yes, I have.
And in fact, you previously testified in this case, State of Wisconsin versus Taylor Shabusiness, is that correct?
Yes, on two occasions I provided testimony in this matter.
And on those occasions, did you provide testimony regarding your background and your licensing?
Yes.
And the background information generally that you provided in that testimony, does that remain accurate here today?
Yes, there have been no changes to my licensure status or any of my employment or professional affiliations.
Thank you. And Dr. Seipel, you were then subsequently asked by the court in this case to provide an additional competency evaluation. Is that correct?
Yes.
Can you just briefly address the additional materials that you reviewed in order to prepare the present report?
Yes, so in order to prepare the present report regarding the defendant's competency to proceed, I performed a direct in-person examination of the defendant. And that occurred on July 12th within the Brown County Jail. I again reviewed the criminal complaint for this case and discussed portions thereof with the defendant in the evaluation. I reviewed all of the competency and criminal responsibility evaluations completed to date in this case. I reviewed updated records from the jail medical service. I reviewed a discharge summary from the defendant's previous treatment at the Brown County Nicolay Psychiatric Center. And I also spoke with defense counsel regarding recent observations and concerns, as well as reviewed the motions that were provided to me by defense counsel requesting new competency evaluations.
After all of that additional document review, the discussions that you had, and the in-person meeting that you had with Ms. Shabusiness, did you ultimately form a conclusion regarding her competency to proceed in this criminal case?
Yes, I did.
And did you prepare a report that discussed those conclusions and the bases for those conclusions?
Yes, I did.
And is that report a letter to the court dated July 17th of 2023 that you provided to the court?
Yes.
Again, that report is 20 pages in length, is that correct?
Yes.
Your Honor, I believe that all of the parties are looking at document 223. I would just ask for the record that this be marked as an exhibit, or I don't know if it necessarily needs to be marked as an exhibit, but that the court accept document 223 as the report prepared by Dr. Seipel in this case.
Any objection, Mr. Fraley?
Your Honor, I have document 223, which is the report from Dr. Seipel, dated July 17th of 2023, and it was filed on that same date.
You have any objection to my receipt?
I have no objection.
That'll be received into evidence. Go ahead, Mr. Lizay.
Dr. Seipel, I believe that you indicated that you had reviewed all of the other competency reports that were prepared in this case. Does that include a report that was recently authored by Dr. Litton, which called into question the defendant's competency in this case?
Yes.
And did you have an opportunity to thoroughly review that report?
Yes, I did.
And does your report outline some concerns that you have with Dr. Litton's report?
Yes, it does.
Ultimately, do you come to the same conclusion as Dr. Litton?
No, I reached the opposite conclusion with respect to the issue of competency.
And what is your conclusion with respect to Ms. Shabizness's competency in this matter?
So the opinion that I offer to a reasonable degree of professional certainty is that the defendant is presently competent to proceed.
And your report lists a number of reasons for that opinion, does it not?
It does.
And I would like to just sort of walk through some of those reasonings, if we could. First of all, you address, I think, the issue of her background materials and the threshold question of whether or not she has a mental illness. I'd like to start with that supposition. What is your opinion with respect to whether or not Ms. Shabizness currently suffers from a diagnosable mental illness?
I would object on foundation. I don't know if there are enough questions asked to render an opinion at this point. So I object on foundation.
I think he has given a sufficient foundation. He listed all of the things that he did, including reviewing all of his records, conducting his own personal interview with her, and evaluating all of the available materials in this case.
Overrule the objection. Go ahead.
And so after reviewing the totality of the sources, I noted that at some times in the defendant's history, she perhaps has experienced clinically significant depression, has contemplated suicide, has had various behavioral issues. Although I found no evidence to sustain an independent diagnosis of a severe mental illness, such as bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, or a like condition.
With respect to the defendant's own reporting of having such a mental condition, what did you note?
I noted that there's been a remarkable inconsistency in the extent to which she has endorsed having a mental illness such as bipolar disorder, and instead on many occasions has ascribed any related or similar symptoms squarely to her abuse of intoxicants, most notably methamphetamine.
And did you also review information about her recent behaviors, whether that occurred in the jail or in court proceedings and things of that nature?
Yes, I did.
And what were your observations with respect to those recent behaviors and how they might impact a diagnosis of bipolar?
Yes, I noted that there certainly have been behavioral issues within the jail and in the courtroom, and I am certainly well aware of the assaultive behavior towards the previous defense attorney within the courtroom. I'm aware of the defendant throwing a chair at Dr. Litton. And while certain such behaviors certainly are disruptive and concerning, I found no evidence to suggest that there was a consistent pattern of such behaviors that could be directly attributed to symptoms of a mental illness. Rather, I am fundamentally unable to rule out that they're primarily volitional in nature.
In particular, let's deal with the issue of her throwing a chair at Dr. Litton. What concerned you about that particular incident in terms of your ability to assess whether that was related to mental health or volitional conduct?
So certainly if that were a pattern of behavior that was consistently occurring and seemed to be out of control, that could be an issue relative to competency and attending to and meaningfully participating in proceedings. Although, again, it was an isolated event. And there's no way that after immediately, at least according to Dr. Litton's report, immediately after the defendant did such behavior, she calmly sat back down, which is inconsistent with someone in a state of psychotic agitation who typically would require significant external intervention or chemical or physical restraint in order to regain behavioral composure.
And did you note, so similarly, did you note behavioral concerns that occur at the jail?
Yes, there are very intermittent acting out behaviors that do result in citations within the jail.
And did the nature of those citations, is that, in your view, consistent with a psychosis or consistent with volitional behavior?
I would say I cannot rule out that they're most fundamentally volitionally motivated, and perhaps by motives such as boredom as well.
And what is the basis for forming that conclusion?
Again, there's a lack of consistency both in the timing and type of these behaviors that were occurring. Again, they were very isolated, brief incidents. And again, other motives could reasonably be inferred, such as I'm aware that there was a day in which she stood nude when receiving her meal trays, and it could easily be inferred that exhibitionism or sexual gratification was a motive at play, and there was otherwise no evidence that she was actively symptomatic of a mental illness on the date that she exhibited such behavior.
From your review of the jail records and from the other behavioral observations of Ms. Shabusiness, does it appear that she has any trouble controlling her behaviors when she has a need to get her own needs met?
Calls for speculation. Objection. It calls for speculation, Your Honor, and it's kind of a compound question.
Overruled. Answer the question if you can, Doc.
And so I would say that based upon the information provided within the jail records, as well as my knowledge and contacts with the defendant, it does appear that she is able to maintain behavioral control when it is in her desire or interest to do so. For example, she displayed a sustained period of behavioral stability, which she herself directly attributed to her desire to have reduced security precautions within the jail.
And Dr. Seipel, you obviously mentioned you reviewed the report of Dr. Litton with respect to the contact that she had with Ms. Shabusiness and her observations in the course of her interview. Could you describe how your interview with Ms. Shabusiness differed from Dr. Litton's observations?
Yes, and so Ms. Shabusiness, during now two contacts, and especially focusing on the most recent contact earlier this month, she maintained behavioral control. There was no acting out or aggressive behaviors. There were some moments in which her commentary waxed somewhat provocative, although she was easily redirected from such commentary, such that we sustained rational, reciprocal verbal communication about her recent adjustment within the jail, her clinical concerns, and various aspects of the pending case, such that I did not note any substantial deficits in her mental capacity to understand the proceedings or meaningfully aid in the defense.
And I want to talk particularly about that last point. You did in detail address with her understanding of the legal proceedings, is that right?
Yes.
And was she able to meaningfully describe the roles of the parties and the purpose of these proceedings and how they would go forward?
Yes.
Did she really express any concerns regarding any of those issues?
I would say there were some minor points of confusion, such as the maximum sentence for her lesser charges, or some of the nuances of the no contest plea, although she easily responded to brief education about those topics, such that in the end, there was no substantial deficits in her understanding of the proceedings in general, or the specific posture of this case, and the plea that she has selected for her defense.
And on the second point, the ability to assist in her defense, one of the concerns I think that Dr. Litton raised was proclaimed amnesia or inability to recall events. Is that something that you significantly noted in your interview with Ms. Shabusiness?
What was interesting was that across prior evaluations, she has claimed amnesia for past events, most specifically the date of her alleged misconduct in this case, although she did not make such a claim during our most recent contact. Rather, she related what seemed to be an intact recollection of the date in question, but was able to comment coherently about different aspects of her experience and her mental status during that time frame.
One of the other issues that it appeared Dr. Litton relied upon strongly is this idea of both audio and visual hallucinations. Did you make any notation of that in your interview with her?
Yes, I noted that while there were some intermittent moments in which the defendant did claim to experience those symptoms, especially during the moments of the interview, I noted that to the extent that there's any legitimacy to those symptoms, they did not impair her ability to focus and communicate rationally with me. And the broader information available to me suggests that it is unlikely such symptoms are indeed legitimate.
And can you Can you provide some detail on that, your concerns as to the legitimacy of those hallucinations and why you have those concerns?
Yes, my concerns are manifold, and I will detail them. There has been a remarkable inconsistency in the defendant's endorsement of symptoms across time. There has been discrepancy between what she has said to forensic evaluators and what she has said to clinicians within the jail in a similar time frame. She's been vague and unable to elaborate in those moments when she has endorsed symptoms. And moreover, outside of perhaps her contact with Dr. Litton, no one has conceptualized her as being preoccupied with internal stimuli across those clinical and forensic contexts. Moreover, on past psychological testing, there's been a significantly elevated probability reveal that she is feigning symptoms of mental illness, or at the very least, is not a credible informant regarding the symptoms of her mental illness. And moreover, the visual hallucinations she has recently endorsed, specifically this supposed green train that plays Johnny Cash music, according to the forensic psychology and psychiatry literature, such symptoms are remarkably suspicious and not consistent with legitimate visual hallucinations.
And doctor, within your field, is there psychological or psychiatric testing that could be done in order to try to assess whether or not a patient is feigning symptoms?
Yes, there is.
And did you note whether or not Dr. Litton performed any of those such tests?
I did not find any indication in her report that she administered any form of psychological testing.
Is it unusual in your experience that someone would merely accept those claims without doing any such testing?
I would say in a forensic setting, in general, yes, it is unusual, but especially in a case of this stature and with this history that has called into question the legitimacy of her symptoms, to the extent that an opinion is predicated upon those symptoms, it would be against best practice for that opinion to not be supported by any form of psychometric data or analysis.
And in your review of the other evaluations that have been done of Ms. Chavisnes, did other evaluators perform such tests?
Yes, specifically Dr. Tracy Lucetta and Dr. Christina Engen both administered psychological testing to the defendant.
And were there concerns raised in the course of that psychological testing regarding the potential for feigning symptoms?
Yes, on both of those occasions, concern was raised about the possibility of feigned psychiatric symptoms.
And that is consistent with your own observations of Ms. Chavisnes as well, correct?
Yes.
And then, Doctor, again, just to reiterate, what is your conclusion with respect to Ms. Chavisnes' competency to proceed in this matter?
My conclusion, to a reasonable degree of professional certainty, is that Ms. Chavisnes is competent to proceed.
Thank you. I have no further questions at this time.
Cross-examination, Mr. Frelick.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. Dr. Seipel, good morning.
Good morning.
So you did a competency evaluation on my client, Taylor Denise Chavisnes, correct?
Yes.
And you met with her at the Brown County Jail on July 12th of 2023, correct?
Yes.
How long was that interview?
It was approximately 90 minutes.
And where did the interview occur?
It was in a conference room within the area of the jail that was immediately adjacent to the reception area.
And it was just you and Ms. Chavisnes in the interview room?
There was also a postdoctoral forensic trainee with my practice who accompanied me and was a silent observer for the evaluation.
Was that the postdoctoral fellow, Dr. Steven Steinert?
Yes.
Was that typical practice to have another person, like a fellow, sit in on the evaluation with you and the defendant?
Yes, for training purposes, that is standard practice to have postdoctoral fellows accompany and observe evaluations.
Did Dr. Steinert ask any questions or engage in any conversation during the interview on July 12th?
No, he was an entirely silent observer.
Okay. Was Ms. Chavisnes handcuffed at the time?
Yes, she was.
And then she was also handcuffed to the floor?
Her handcuffs were secured to a waist belt, and her ankle shackles were secured to a metal ring upon the floor.
Okay. So she could not get up or do anything, correct?
She could not rise from her seat, at least not fully due to those restraints.
After July 12th, after your interview was done, after it was completed, did you go back to see her again or not?
I did not.
And basically, is it your understanding that as it relates to the issue of competency, the law, because you've been in the field, that a person is not responsible for criminal conduct if at the time of the conduct, as a result of mental disease or defect, the person lacked substantial capacity either to appreciate the wrongfulness of their conduct or conform their conduct to the requirements of the law. Is that correct?
Judge, I'm going to object at this point. That's the standard for NGI, not competency. So, yes, at the time of the conduct, competency is her present sense.
Yes, I'll ask a different question.
All right, question is withdrawn.
You did address that issue, though, as well, correct?
The issue of NGI?
Yes.
No, I was not ordered to address that issue in this case.
Okay. As to the issue of competency, what were the elements for that that you were looking for?
Yes, so evaluating a defendant's competency in the state of Wisconsin is guided by Statute 971.13, which provides the legal standard that no person shall be tried, convicted, or sentenced for a commission of a crime so long as they would lack substantial capacity to understand the proceedings or meaningfully assist in their defense.
When you talked to, thank you, when you talked to Ms. Shabizis on July 12th, did she have any difficulty understanding what you were talking about?
No.
Would you agree that she was not the best historian as far as providing detailed answers to you?
I would say that in terms of providing her personal history, there was no substantial deficits in her memory functioning or ability to convey such information. I would say that there was a vagueness to her endorsement of clinical symptoms that was not in and of itself suggestive of inability to provide detailed responses.
How did you start the interview off? Did you kind of have some small talk and then go into it, or can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yes, so every competency interview begins with an advisement of the evaluation purpose and the attendant limits to confidentiality associated with the professional contact.
Okay. And then you started to kind of talk about some of the problems that she's had at the jail. Is that fair?
I'd say that not necessarily problems per se, but beginning with the discussion just overall of her functioning and adjustment within recent months, which naturally lends itself to discussion of various clinical issues, different events that have happened over the pendency of this case, and then proceeded into very direct and detailed discussion of various competency-related terms and topics.
You had a chance to review some Brown County jail records with regards to her stay there, correct? Her progress?
Yes.
You went through all the records, correct?
I reviewed records that were provided to me from the end of December of 2022 through July 6th of 2023.
You reviewed records that I sent to you, correct?
Yes, there were some additional incident reports from the jail that were sent to me after I had sent this report in for submission, and I did review those.
When you looked at the jail records, did you find that she had a lot of different issues in the jail on a daily basis with regards to not coming out of her room, not standing for jail count, other issues?
I would say the only issue that has been regular, though not necessarily daily, has been failing to stand for the required counts within the jail.
Okay. What about, was there an incident where she allegedly took a staple and jammed it into her arm where she needed to leave and get some medical care?
Yes, there was.
Can you tell me about that, what you reviewed as to that topic?
Yes, and so there were, and again, that was around the time that these records began in December of 2022. There was an incident in which she had inserted a staple into her skin and then was sent out to the emergency department for treatment of that injury. And what is noteworthy was when discussing that during the clinical interview with Ms. Shabizis, as she suggested that behavior was largely motivated by a desire for, as she called it, a change of scenery or to get some time away from the jail.
Do you know if when that happened, she was suicidal or in a psychotic state at that time?
And so she disclaimed to me experiencing suicidal intent at the time of that behavior. And immediately upon her return to the jail and discussing that incident with jail providers, she denied feeling suicidal and did not endorse or display any psychotic symptoms.
That incident where she put a staple in her arm, that was self-mutilating behavior, self-injurious behavior, correct?
I would say yes. It was a behavior of her volition that resulted in an extensive, a minor injury.
Okay. During your contact with her, did you find her to be suffering from like a depressive disorder, from PTSD, from other issues?
I know that then she gives somewhat of mixed and conflicting information with regard to her recent emotional functioning, suggesting that on the one hand she was experiencing some depression, although perhaps on the other hand experiencing some modest mood elevation. Although during the moment of that contact she did not present as significantly depressed, she did not present with significantly elevated mood. Essentially, there were no mood-related symptoms that impaired her ability to sustain focus and communicate coherently and rationally with me. I mean, with respect to the issue of post-traumatic stress, there does seem to be some symptoms of that kind in her clinical history, stemming from seemingly a history of abuse, although she's been inconsistent in the extent to which she has endorsed abuse. Although there was nothing that she endorsed or displayed that warranted an independent diagnosis of a condition like post-traumatic stress disorder.
Did Ms. Shabizis indicate to you that her father had sexually abused her when she was younger?
Yes, that she did endorse and was experiencing that kind of abuse, and she conveyed that to me during the current clinical interview.
You also commented on the fact that her mother died, I believe maybe in 2008. Did you take that into consideration as her as you reviewed her mental status?
I would say that is an aspect of her clinical history that I am aware of, although I did not note any direct impingement upon that historical event upon her current mental status.
I studied the jail records. There was an entry on or about June 19th of 2023 where Ms. Shabizis apparently wrote on the jail wall with blood, happy birthday for an officer or somebody. You remember seeing that?
Yes, I did find indication that she had written some letters upon the wall and filled in at least one of those letters with her own blood.
Does that give you pause when you assess her whole overall mental status?
I would say if there were more active indications of acute psychiatric instability, that event would give me more reason for concern, although given its isolated nature and the various performance strengths and psychiatric stability that she displayed during the clinical interview, no, it does not cause any substantial concern on my end.
Did you understand that Taylor Shabizis was prescribed medications at the Brown County Jail, at least in 2023?
Yes, she has been treated with some psychotropic medications within the jail.
Like olanzapine, correct?
Yes.
And did you gather or garner information that she wasn't taking the meds, she refused to take the meds, that the meds got passed around, that she didn't actually ingest the medication so that she could get better?
There was indication, at least from her medication administration record, that she generally took that medication daily during the month of March of this year. I'm also aware that there was at least one incident in which a pill was discovered in the pocket of her uniform, which calls into question her medication compliance. Although since March, she has been remarkably inconsistent in accepting that medication, including taking it just a few times in recent months.
Is it fair to say, Dr. Seipel, with your training and experience, that if people don't take their psychotropic medications, then they can have a lot of mental health problems, and that can impact their understanding, memory, all of that, correct?
I say to the extent that someone has an underlying mental illness, then yes, medication non-compliance could cause some issues with their mental status and relevant functional capacities.
You also reviewed, is it true that you reviewed some jail records where she was walking around naked during dinner service, standing naked in front of her jail cell window, and having issues with that? Taking the clothes off, putting them back on.
Yes, there was one date in which it was noted that she stood nude at the window of her cell for passing of two of the meals during meal service.
Also, did you gather that she refused to stand for head count often when asked to do so?
Yes, and that would tend to happen in spurts, where there'd be several days in a row where she, and it was also noteworthy that it was often several other inmates on her pond, would all refuse to stand for Cohen.
With regards to this case, you had a chance to review Dr. Diane Litton, PhD, her evaluation of Taylor Shabusiness, correct?
Yes.
Her conclusions and findings are in direct conflict with your findings and conclusions. Is that fair?
Yes, we reached the opposite opinion with respect to the issue of competency.
And that's where the contest lies, correct, on the issue of competency?
Yes, as my understanding, that is what I have been court-ordered to evaluate in this case, and as my understanding, that is the purpose of this morning's hearing.
You had a chance to review Dr. Deborah Collins' report, correct?
Yes, I did.
You had a chance to review your earlier report, correct?
Yes.
You had a chance to review Dr. Tracy Lucetta's report from April 29th of 2022, correct?
Yes.
In Dr. Lucetta's report, do you know her?
I do not personally know Dr. Lucetta, although I've certainly seen her work on several occasions.
Okay, thank you. But you read over the report and you're aware of her findings, correct?
Yes.
Would you agree with me that she recommended a transfer of Ms. Shabusiness to one of the state's psychiatric facilities like Mendota Mental Health Institute, or Winnebago Mental Health Institute for further evaluation under close and extended observation by qualified professionals? Are you aware of that?
Yes, that is the recommendation that she offered at the conclusion of her report.
Do you agree with that? That maybe the court should consider having Ms. Shabusiness go for a longer observation period with a team to assess her competency, rather than having a 90-minute interview or conference with the doctor?
Well, I would note, sir, that my examination findings were the product of substantially more data than just that 90-minute contact, a reflective review of extensive records that predated the charges being filed in this case, as well as extensive observations of the defendant over the entire pendency of this case. And has that provided sufficient information for me to reach an opinion to a reasonable degree of professional certainty? I do not believe that additional inpatient examination is warranted or necessary at this time.
Would you agree that this is a very complex case from a competency standpoint, from a mental health standpoint?
I guess I would not necessarily say that it is head and shoulders more complex than many other cases that I have handled in my career.
You've only had your license since February of 2022. Is that fair?
Yes.
And would you agree that Dr. Litton, who is a PhD like you, has substantially more experience than you do? Fair?
I would say she's been practicing longer, although the extent to which her practice is focused on competency examination is unclear to me.
But you're aware that she did work at Mendota Mental Health in the past, correct?
I'm aware that she was employed at least one of the state psychiatric institutes, yes.
Did you look at her curriculum vitae at all?
Yes, I did review it, as it was attached to the PDF that also contained her report.
Okay. Would you agree that more data, more information could be obtained regarding Taylor Shabusiness if she went to Mendota or Winnebago for a 10-day, 30-day observation period? A lot more information could be obtained, correct?
I would say that yes, in a very general sense. Certainly, more time being observed by different professionals would provide additional data on observations.
Okay. Did you review the Bellin Health mental health records with regards to Taylor Shabusiness?
Yes, Yes, I did review treatment records from Bellin that you sent to me after my report was submitted pertaining to two episodes of care, one from 2012 and one from 2014.
I know that you indicated that you may consider preparing a supplemental report. You didn't do that with regards to the Bellin issue, Bellin records, correct?
Yes, for our correspondence, I advised that if upon reviewing those records, there was any information that altered the opinion offered in my reports, that I would offer an addendum. And after reviewing those records, there was nothing that altered the opinion offered in my report, so there was no need to offer an addendum to that effect.
Okay. Thank you. As to Ms. Chibizis, she apparently received mental health services at Bellin Health here in Green Bay from approximately July 15th of 2012 to October 31st of 2014. Is that fair?
I noted that there were two separate inpatient admissions. One that was for 3 days in July of 2012, and the other that was for 3 days in October of 2014.
How many days in July of 20? What date? You said July of 2012 and July of 2014?
It was July of 2012 and October of 2014.
How long was she at Bellin in October of 2014?
It was from October 28th to October 31st of 2014.
Was that inpatient admission?
Yes. Okay.
So she had two inpatient admissions at Bellin, correct?
Yes, from the records that I received, and reflected two inpatient psychiatric admissions.
And would you agree that she was admitted to Bellin Health Psychiatric Center as an adolescent because she had mental health issues, mental health problems?
I would say that yes, that in a broad sense there were mental health issues and symptoms that seemed to prompt the presentation to those facilities.
Did you gain information that she was prescribed Lamictal, Wellbutrin XL, Abilify, Seroquel, medications of that sort?
Yes, those types of psychotropic medications, the records indicated, were provided to her within the facility.
That she was diagnosed with depression and attention deficit hyperactivity disorder?
Yes, those were historical diagnoses noted in her record, and she was also assigned a diagnosis across both of the inpatient admissions of a mood disorder not otherwise specified.
Thank you very much. And was it your understanding that as a youth she was expelled from school?
Yes, that is my understanding.
Can you explain the mood disorder? I'm looking at a report from Bellin Health that seems to indicate a diagnostic impression, access one, mood disorder not otherwise specified with prior history of psychosis. Could you expound on that a little bit for me?
Yes, and so from the information I gleaned from these records, it indicated that the admission in 2012 was prompted at least in part by an adverse reaction to the antidepressant medication sertraline. Sertraline is a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor medication that in adolescence is widely known in some cases to cause paradoxical or adverse reactions, such as increased depression, increased suicidal ideation, and in some rarer instances, it can induce psychotic symptoms. And so the record suggested that it was not until beginning that medication that the defendant began to display psychotic symptoms, and those symptoms promptly resolved when that medication was discontinued within the hospital. So that would not be consistent with an emerging schizophrenia, but rather it was a time-limited and purely medication-induced psychotic episode.
Did you read in some of the Bellin records that one of the major stressors in her life was the loss of her mother at such a young age?
Yes, that was clearly reflected in the records.
When she was 16, she was voluntarily admitted to the crisis center for some suicidal ideation and being a runaway and not taking medications. Is that correct?
Yes, and she was admitted to an inpatient psychiatric unit after presenting initially to the crisis center.
And in the records also, did you gather information that Ms. Shabizas had complaints of feeling things that were not real, almost like a dream, for several weeks, for 2 weeks or so, sometime in October of 2014?
Yes, I did read in the records that she endorsed experiences of that type in the time period leading up to her hospitalization.
And you agree that she had a real hard time with the loss of her mother and cries about it quite often?
Yes, that again was reflected in the records that she continued to struggle to adjust in the wake of her mother's death.
And she, did you understand that Ms. Shabizas had to go to school even on the day that her mom passed away?
To the extent that that was contained anywhere in the information I provided, that is not something that I took note of.
In school, she did terrible. She got all F's. Is that correct? Did you gather? I'm sorry. Did you gather that from going through the Bellin records?
Yes, it described how there was a decline in her academic performance during the school year following her mother's death.
Now, have you had cases where people that you work with in a professional capacity as a forensic psychologist, where people have court orders for civil commitment or court orders to take psychotropic medication?
Yes, that is certainly something that is commonplace across the state of Wisconsin. Okay.
And in this case, you did receive a copy of those orders, the order for commitment and the order for medications for Taylor Shabizas?
I did not receive the court orders, although I received discharge documentation pertaining to the hospitalization during which she was assigned such a court order.
Okay. And an order for commitment, that means the person has a mental defect. Is that correct?
The relevant legal standard primarily pertains to dangerousness. The person is in acute danger to oneself, others, or of serious property damage. It is not necessarily predicated per se upon any specific psychiatric diagnosis.
If I'm looking at an order for commitment and it talks about court finds the subject is mentally ill, and that says it for Taylor Shabizas, would you believe that to be accurate?
I would say that, again, it is implicating some degree of mental health symptoms, although, again, it can be somewhat of parsing words, looking at is it a legitimate mental illness per se versus aberrant mental status resulting from acute and insignificant ingestion of intoxicants.
And I'm looking at the order for commitment. The court finds, number 4, the subject has been adjudicated pursuant to 18 U.S.C. United States Code 922, G4 as a mental defective or committed to a mental institution. Would you have any reason to doubt that?
I just wonder if you can clarify your question, sir.
Well, the order says that, so does that mean that she's got a mental defect?
I would say it means that someone involved in petitioning for that order apparently did believe that she did, yes.
And that from your review, was it your understanding that Taylor Shabizas was committed for 6 months to Nicolet Psychiatric Center?
I'm aware that she was subject to a 6-month civil commitment that did not result in her placement within the facility for that duration, but rather discharged her with several conditions that, if not followed, could have potentially resulted in her return to a more restrictive setting.
And was your understanding that she worked with Brown County Human Services when she was at the Nicolet Treatment Center?
Yes.
And was it your understanding that the Nicolet Psychiatric Center is a maximum level of treatment? It's a locked unit. It's an inpatient facility. Is that correct?
Yes, it is a locked inpatient psychiatric unit.
So they don't just send anybody there. If you have a mental health problem, that's probably where you go, correct? At least in this town.
I would say if you're having an episode of aberrant mental status, regardless of the etiology, that yes, that it would commonly be a setting in which an individual would be placed.
If someone is deemed to be to suffer from a mental defect or a mental illness, does that always tag along?
Yes,
with them? Is that always a label that they have for the future going forward?
I would say certainly it's something that, to the extent it's contained within someone's file, that's a label that, you know, future evaluators and clinicians will see. Although, according to best practice, they would perform their own independent evaluation to determine whether they think the individual continued to qualify for such a diagnosis.
Okay. And you don't often see people being ordered by the court to be required to involuntarily take medication and take treatment, correct?
I would say that the base rate for that, it is certainly quite low, as again, part of the legal standard revolves around dangerousness, and it's a relatively high bar for someone to be determined to be in acute danger to themselves or others or significant property damage.
Well, was it your understanding, at least back in 2021 when Taylor Shabizis was at Nicolet, that she was prohibited from possessing a firearm because of her commitment? Is that true?
Objection, Your Honor, just to the relevance of this.
Goes to the dangerousness that he just testified to.
Which is not at issue here.
I said what I said, so that's my, I mean, that's just my argument, Your Honor.
I'm going to sustain the objection. Move on, Mr. Fraley.
All right. The fact that she was under a civil commitment order and a order to take psychotropic medications, that's a very serious consideration that a psychologist has to take into account when assessing the competency issues, correct?
I would say that certainly is an important piece of a defendant's clinical history that is taken into consideration, although it does not necessarily directly translate on the issue of her contemporary mental status, especially given that at the time of her admission to that facility, she had been using methamphetamine several times per day for several months leading up to it, which could easily explain the aberrant mental status at that time, and presumably is not a factor given her restricted access to intoxicants within the jail at present.
You know, as a psychologist, you have a PhD degree, you have a lot of education, a lot of experience with your 800 competency evaluations that you've done. You look at records, correct? And you've looked at the Bellin records for Taylor Shabizis, correct?
Yes.
And at least as the diagnosis for her from Bellin, is it true that at least in 2021 they diagnosed her with bipolar disorder, current episode manic severe with psychotic features? You remember reading that?
Yes, I am aware that that diagnosis was assigned when she was hospitalized in 2021.
And that she was even treated with medications like Aristada and Prozacin, correct?
Yes.
And I looked at did you look at the Brown County Human Services Community Treatment records, which I believe are part of the Nicolet records? You looked at those records, correct?
I reviewed the records that pertains to the inpatient hospitalization. So to the extent that there were any peripheral records that did not directly pertain to that episode of care, I cannot necessarily say that I reviewed them.
It's true that she was at Nicolet, they say Brown County, but she was at Nicolet from March 22nd of 2021 to April 12th of 2021, correct?
Yes.
And in the records it says, quote, this patient was on the psychiatric unit at Brown County from 3/22/21 to 4/12/21. She has a diagnosis of bipolar disorder and presented extremely psychotic and manic. And then it talks about her situation was complicated by methamphetamine use and also by the fact that she was pregnant. Correct?
Yes, I'm aware that those were the impressions and the information contained within those records.
Do you agree with the fact that she was diagnosed with being bipolar?
I agree that that diagnosis was assigned to her as reflected in the records, although providing a diagnosis of bipolar disorder to someone who had very acutely been abusing numerous intoxicants is not best practice, as a bipolar disorder, by definition and by diagnostic criteria, cannot be most fundamentally attributable to the effects of a medical condition or an ingested substance. And so from my perspective, I don't see how those providers could have determined the presence of an independent mental illness separate from the very significant poly substance abuse that continued up until the day of her admission to the facility.
So it's your opinion, you don't think she's got bipolar disorder, correct?
It is my opinion that the totality of information available to me weighs contrary to that diagnosis.
But do you know for sure if she has bipolar or not?
I would say to a reasonable degree of professional certainty, she does not meet diagnostic criteria for bipolar disorder.
Who diagnoses that? Is that the purview of a psychologist or a psychiatrist?
I would say either of those disciplines would be trained and equipped to assign such a diagnosis.
In this case, for a psychologist, there's two gold standard tests, correct?
I would say that certainly there are tests that are more widely used than others. Some people will apply the label of gold standard, although it's not as if there's a list I can consult that differentiates gold standard from non-gold standard tests, psychological tests.
The main widely known test is the MMPI, Minnesota Multiphasic Personality Inventory, is that correct?
I would say that yes, that is more the most widely used objective measure of adult psychopathology and personality.
And then the other test is the Milan Clinical Multiaxial Inventory, is that correct?
Yes, that certainly is almost as widely used as the MMPI for the same purposes, and primarily it is used specifically to tease apart a different personality disorder diagnoses. That is an advantage that it carries over the MMPI.
You can get a lot of data as a psychologist by performing these two tests on a patient or an individual, correct?
It certainly can yield relevant information, yes.
Did you administer these two tests to Taylor Shabizis when you met with her earlier this year or on July 12th of 2023?
I did not.
Okay. And yet you criticize Dr. Litton for not doing that as well, correct?
I criticized her for not performing more symptom validity testing, which is something that is embedded within an instrument such as MMPI, although there are also separate instruments that are much briefer that could be used for the same purpose.
And I think you said that Dr. Engine and Dr. Lucetta did the MMPI and the MCMI, is that correct?
So Dr. Engine administered the MMPI and Dr. Lucetta administered a competency-specific instrument, the evaluation of competency to stand trial, I believe it was the revised edition. And so within that, it contains subscales looking at the probability that an evaluation subject is feigning both psychotic and non-psychotic symptoms, towards feigning adjudicated incompetency.
More information could be gathered about Ms. Shabizis's mental health profile and status as it relates to competency if she went inpatient for a period of time at Mendota or Winnebago. Is that fair?
I object that this has been asked and answered already.
No, it hasn't, because it relates to the MMPI and the MCMI. I can rephrase, Your Honor. Maybe I should do that.
All right. Well, maybe you should. The question is withdrawn. Ask another question.
Okay. Thank you very much. As it relates to the MMPI and MCMI, if Ms. Shabizis was sent to or transferred to Winnebago or Mendota, more data, more information could be garnered as it relates to this competency issue. Is that fair?
I would say that the repeated administration of those instruments could yield additional clinical data, although, again, there was sufficient data for me to yield an opinion to a reasonable degree of professional certainty regarding her competency. So I really have no reason to believe that there would be much competency-specific data that would be yielded by such instruments.
But the issue as it relates to competency, as far as the doctors, the psychologists are concerned, it's kind of fractured because people have different opinions. Is that fair? The professionals have different opinions?
I would say that, yes, certainly in terms of recently that myself and Dr. Litton have reached diverging opinions regarding the defendant's competency.
Did you also understand that Taylor Shabizis was admitted as an EM1 petition for auditory hallucinations and tactile hallucinations such as being punched in the face and stomach and other delusional behavior? Was that your understanding that that happened?
It is my understanding that such symptoms were endorsed upon her admission to the Nicolay Psychiatric Center. Again, I would note that that occurred following a prolonged period of heavy methamphetamine use.
And she was at least telling staff at Brown County that she was seeing the staff's hair fly all around, that she was hearing voices and seeing things like small rabbits and feeling as though a magnet was keeping her in her chair. That was in the reports as well, correct?
Yes, the records reflect that she did endorse such symptoms at that time.
And she indicated that all she wanted to do was just go to heaven, correct? That was in the reports.
Yes, there were certain comments to that and other effect, generally pertaining to thoughts about death and or suicide.
And did she also indicate that she couldn't think of what was going on in her head and that her thoughts were disorganized?
From my recollection of the records, yes, she endorsed cognitive symptoms of that kind during that treatment episode.
Did it indicate, at least, now I'm going to focus on your report. Did it indicate in your report on page 3 that you talked about there was some difficulty or impossibility in parsing out to what extent she got improvement from taking medications, psychotropic medications, versus forced abstinence from intoxicants?
Yes, I noted that was, again, a point of confounding information with regard to her diagnosis.
And that she had a pretty significant history of polysubstance abuse, correct?
Yes.
She abused marijuana, hallucinogens, cocaine, opiates, methamphetamine, heroin, fentanyl, correct?
Yes.
And that she had aberrant mental status and sometimes a tendency to rampage, is that right?
Yes, and she specifically attributed that rampaging tendency to acute methamphetamine intoxication.
Did she ever tell you that, when you met with her on July 12th of 2023 for 90 minutes, did you see her smile at times where you wouldn't smile? Did you see her laughing inappropriately? Did you see unusual, bizarre, weird behavior?
I would say that yes, that the grinning out of context and some brief moments of inappropriate laughter were noted. I would not classify them as bizarre in this instance, and they did not detract from us having irrational reciprocal exchange.
But she would smile out of context to a evaluation topic, correct?
In some isolated moments, yes.
Did you see any evidence of psychosis at all during your contacts with her on either occasion when you met with her?
I did not.
You did a report to the court on November 18th of 2022, correct? Competency evaluation?
Yes.
And then in there you indicated... page 5 of your report, that you indicated, in effect, her current endorsement of psychiatric symptoms appears illegitimate or, at the very least, exaggerated. Correct?
Yes, that is what I wrote in that document.
So is it fair to say that you don't know if she is suffering from some kind of a mental disorder or if it's feigning or faking? You can't say 100% what it is, correct?
I would say, again, to the totality of the available information that is available to me at this time, to a reasonable degree of professional certainty, I can say that there is no credible evidence of her laboring with a severe mental illness, such as bipolar disorder or schizophrenia, which are typically the types of psychiatric conditions that would in and of themselves have the potential to render someone incompetent to proceed.
Did you ever see her distracted by internal or external stimuli of a delusional or psychotic nature during either interview that you had with her?
I would say during the November 2022 interview, there was no evidence whatsoever of any distraction. During the current interview, there was a moment in which she quite forcibly presented herself as if she was seeing the green train within the room, a symptom which, again, I find no credence or ability to believe, but even to the extent that I would indulge that it did occur, I promptly redirected her, and there was no further apparent issue with such a green train. So again, to the extent that symptom was legitimate, it was a one-time instance, easily redirected, and had no impingement upon her rational participation.
During your interview with her on July 12th of 2023, did you see her get off the chair, sit on the floor, kneel down, turn her back to you, or anything like that?
She remained seated. There was no restlessness. There was no attempts to substantially shift her posture. She remained seated, facing towards me, and engaged in our discussion.
When you met with her, did she ever say that she heard voices at all?
She made a vague reference to hearing screams that sometimes come from other inmates within the jail. Other times she believes they're originating from within her own head.
Did she indicate that she was suffering from nightmares at all since being at the jail?
I do believe she made some reference to intermittent experiences of nightmares, yes.
Okay, I have no other questions. Thank you.
Can you redirect, Mr. Lozetta?
Just very briefly, Your Honor. I think early on in the cross-examination, you were asked a question about having a postdoctoral fellow accompany you in the interview. Is that correct?
Yes.
You were asked about the appropriateness of having someone else present during an interview. Did you note in Dr. Litton's interview whether anyone else was present?
Yes, according to that document, it suggests that defense counsel was present for the entirety of that evaluation.
Based on your experience, is that consistent with best practice?
I would say that it is a highly atypical arrangement for a forensic mental health evaluation.
And why is that?
And so when I say a third party, I don't mean a silent observer that was there for training purposes, as I have no reason to believe that my postdoctoral fellow being present had any influence on the interview. And when I say a third party, I mean someone with some form of other pre-existing relationship with the defendant, whether that's an attorney, a relative, or whoever it might be. It is fundamentally impossible to parse out to what extent that person's presence and or influence might have influenced the evaluation subject's performance or the content of their responses.
And in fact, from your review of Dr. Litton's report, does it appear that Mr. Frelick was actually asked at some point during the interview to participate?
I'm going to object to the form of that question, Your Honor. It's in her report. One question was asked. I didn't ask to be there, but the problem was that the chair got...
Mr. Frelick testifying? He's not been sworn as a witness.
The objection.
Relevance.
Overruled. Do you have the question, Doctor?
Can you please be repeated?
Asked, I think, whether or not... From Dr. Litton's report, you were able to observe whether or not Mr. Frelick was actually asked to participate at a point during the interview.
Yes, it did appear from my reading of that report that during the interview, he was asked directly about his impressions of the defendant's competency.
And that was done in front of the defendant?
Again, according to my reading of the report, it does seem that it was done in the room while the defendant was still present.
You were asked a question about medication noncompliance and whether that might have an impact on someone's mental state. Did you observe in the jail records from the recent time period, end of 2022 to present, whether or not Ms. Shabusiness had been compliant with taking any mental health-related medications?
So since the end of March 2023, she has been remarkably inconsistent in accepting olanzapine, which is her prescribed psychotropic medication.
And based on your review of those jail records and your conversations with Ms. Shabusiness, has her noncompliance with medication appeared to significantly impact her functioning?
I did not notice any appreciable change in the records provided to me in her mental status or behavior that would seem to derive from her becoming noncompliant with medications. Really, her baseline behavior remained unchanged even after those medications were discontinued.
And is that significant to your analysis that when she's not taking medication, her behaviors don't appear to get any worse?
I would say certainly it suggests that, one, it's a point of data that weighs contrary to the presence of a legitimate severe mental illness, which typically, if someone were to become noncompliant with medications, there would be a noticeable exacerbation in symptoms. So from that clinical perspective, it's relevant, but also from the forensic perspective, it suggests that medication noncompliance really is a peripheral issue to her competency, that her baseline knowledge and functional capacities appear to remain constant, regardless of whether she is or is not taking psychotropic medication within the jail.
Then, Doctor, you were asked extensively about the stay in Nicolet in 2021, where she, I think it was March of 2021, where she arrived. That was about a 21-day stay, is that correct?
Yes, I noted that it was approximately 3 weeks.
And it was indicated both in the notes and through other information that's available that Ms. Shabusiness had significant methamphetamine use prior to that hospitalization?
Yes.
And did you note a significant change in her behavior from the first part of that stay upon arrival and to her behaviors at time of departure from the facility?
Yes, a linear trend toward psychiatric stability was noted across those 3 weeks, such that the seemingly psychotic symptoms had cleared and her thinking and behavior became more organized, and she was no longer viewed as an imminent risk of harm to herself or others.
So essentially within a relatively short time frame when the methamphetamine was no longer in her body, we're noting a very significant improvement in symptoms.
Yes.
I have no further questions.
On those topics, Mr. Frelick?
I have nothing further.
Okay. Then the question is, I suppose, is whether Dr. Seipel is going to be excused or whether anyone might want to potentially call him as rebuttal testimony to the rebuttal testimony that we may be hearing. I'll start with the state. Do you want him released, or do you want to have him stay on the line?
I think he can be released, Your Honor.
Any objection to him being released?
I have no objection to that.
Dr. Seipel, your participation is concluded. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome, sir.
Any other witnesses you want to call, Mr. Lizay?
Not from the state, Your Honor.
Mr. Frelick?
Your Honor, I'm going to need a little bit of time to talk to Dr. Litton on the issue of whether she's going to testify on rebuttal. We talked about that last night.
Okay, we'll take it. The court will then take a recess for 10 minutes. It is now quarter. It'll be a little more than 10 minutes. It's now quarter to 10. We'll reconvene at 10:05. All right?
Okay.
We are in recess.
Thank you.
You're listening to True Crime Today in the Hidden Killers podcast continuous coverage of the trial of Taylor Shabusiness, Nightmare in Wisconsin.
Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our continuing coverage.
More raw trial audio next.